welcome to the World Peace Diet Circle, our monthly call with our coordinator, our teacher, Dr. Will Tuttle. I'm the course facilitator and coordinator, Steve Prusak, and thank you for being here. The membership site for all members is updated with a couple of readings for this month, so you can log into the membership and get that. Dr. Tuttle is going to tell you more about that. So let's welcome to the call right now our leader and author of the World Peace Diet, Dr. Will Tuttle.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah. You're coming in great.
Coming in? Okay. All right. Great.
Yeah.
Good. So thank you for, as you say, for coordinating all of this so well over the months and years, actually. It's quite a while we've been doing this now. And I want to thank everyone, welcome you all to the call here. And this is our third Thursday traditional World Peace Diet Circle call, where I want to say right from the beginning this week that unlike most other weeks, historically anyway, I don't have an outside guest scheduled on purpose. We have, by the way, I guess I don't have to say this, but just wanted to sort of remind everyone that as part of your membership in the World Peace Diet Circle, you have access to the archives going back over many months, actually, quite a few months. And there are some wonderful, I think, sharings from people, you know, Rory Friedman, John Robbins, Howard Lyman, Colleen Patrick Goudreau, Melanie Joy, Jonathan Balcom. I could go on and on about all that. Harold Brown. We've had lots of people on. So if you came in later and you haven't had a chance to listen to some of those, they usually are towards the beginning of the typically between an hour and 15 minutes, usually an hour and a half is how it's been going, about that long. And it's interesting, I think, to listen to those as well as the sharing that people have in the Q&A. But for tonight, I was thinking it would be nice to, again, have just us here. And please feel free to press star 2 on your phone to raise your hand so we can see it, so that you can ask questions or make comments, anything at all, really, about spreading the vegan message, thriving as a vegan, any suggestions, tips, ideas, dilemmas, crises, wild inspiration, anything at all. We're happy to share that, and I think it's great for us to, you know, get to know each other also, as well as to really work with the ideas underlying all this, which is to be more effective at spreading the vegan message and also really being able to enjoy our lives, to thrive as vegans in this very non-vegan world. We're moving in the direction positively, I think, basically in our culture. And so we want to see that moving faster, at least I do. So, Steve, did you have a question or anything or a comment before I continue on here? Wanted to add?
There's one thing for everyone for your membership site. If you notice when you log in, you're going to see it's all collapsed now. You're going to see a banner for the World Peace Diet Circle and a banner for the facilitator training. You just click on those to open up whatever section you want to go in, because we have so much content in the membership site now, and it was just this long web page, so this was the best way to do it. And I think you probably all got the email about the special bonus video that Dr. Tuttle provided for us that was uploaded into your site towards the bottom of the page as well.
Oh, good. Thanks for mentioning that, Steve. And I'm assuming were you able to get the resources and that PDF file into everybody's site membership area as well?
Yeah, so it's under today's session, and just when you log into your site, just click on the banner that says World Peace Diet Circle. It'll drop down, and you'll see right at the top tonight's session. Just go in there, and you can download and listen on the web player, type in questions throughout tonight or whatever works best.
Great, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. Great, thanks, Steve. So before we actually jump in here, let's just take a moment. I always like to do this wherever you happen to be. Obviously, if you're driving a car or something, don't close your eyes, but just maybe let's just take a moment and turn our attention within and just feel our connection with this beautiful planet, this beautiful Earth that is so abundant and magnificent, glorious, jewel of life, of light, of awareness here somewhere in space, somewhere wherever we are, in the mind of all that is. And give thanks for all the human beings, all of the non-human beings, the whole, all living beings, celebrating their lives here, the web of life and its diversity and preciousness. Give thanks for all of our loved ones and for the whole web of fellow activists who are helping to raise consciousness about compassion for animals and social justice, peace and harmony, freedom and justice for all, for humans as well as non-humans, for future generations, for ecosystems, for workers, and for everyone, knowing that we are all interconnected. And we give thanks knowing that we are really, I think, in many ways privileged, but we're able to live our lives as adventures in awakening to the truth that we are, letting go of the cultural programming that in many ways not only shuts down our sensitivity and awareness, but forces us in many ways to be agents of violence. And as we awaken out of this trance, we sometimes wonder why others don't see it. But as we awaken out of this trance, we begin to discover deeper and deeper levels of not only of wisdom and understanding within ourselves, but also places within ourselves that need further healing. And this is the journey that we're on together, and I think there's nothing more magnificent, really, than to come to this planet and to make this effort to go to the very root of the suffering, not only that we're experiencing, but also that we're part of and causing, and to purify our lives and to awaken our consciousness to the point where we're able to be, as Gandhi said, the change that we would like to see in the world, to be the change. And I think that goes deeper and deeper the more we understand all this. I know it seems to me I keep learning more and more about what that means. So I really deeply appreciate the presence of each and every one of you who are with us on this call this evening, knowing that we are not here by accident, that we're here by certain awareness and consciousness and a common yearning, and that is something that we really, are wise to nurture and to nourish and to feed with our attention, our love, our awareness, knowing that there really ultimately is only one power, and that we're serving that power, the power of love, truth, and life, and peace, and healing, and awareness, for the benefit of all living beings. So just thank you all for the work you're doing. I know if you're on this call, you are making efforts in endeavoring to help spread this message. I want to thank all of you, and again, extend an invitation if you'd like to share anything. Just feel free to either press star 2 on your phone, or if you're at your computer and listening online, you can just click on the Q&A questions, and there's a place where you can type in questions, and we can see it here. So if you want to just type in a question, I'd be happy to respond to it in some way. I'm not going to say that I'll necessarily answer questions, because I think I talked about that in other. Sometimes answering a question can sort of be an act of violence. It just sort of stops the questioning process. I think there's nothing more healthy than the questioning process that takes us deeper and deeper. But we can respond, and we can help each other, I think, to awaken deeper levels of understanding. So I noticed, actually, we have a hand up, which is great. It's our friend Rebecca from Michigan. And we've unmuted your line, Rebecca. So do you have something you'd like to say? Hi, it's great to hear from you.
You do. I actually just have a question for the And I can't remember the gentleman's name who calls from Cleveland all the time. And
yeah, that's actually that's Mark Stroud. He called from Cincinnati,
okay.
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think he's the World Peace the grant program.
So what that is? I'm glad you brought it up. It's the Pollination Project, and he's actually one sort of branch of it. But go ahead. What's your question? I can explain.
Yeah, that's what was confusing me, and I needed some clarification because I proposed a grant I requested a grant for a cooking class I wanted to have in Manchester. Well, I got back a message from the World Peace. No, I don't know what it is. World Peace something or other.
World Peace Yoga.
Said,
yeah.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't yoga.
World Peace Earth.
Yeah, World Peace Earth. Okay, that said. We can't fund these kinds of projects, but we suggest that you send your proposal to the Pollination Project. And I thought, that's what this was. So it's a grant. I mean, you said it's a branch of it, and I'm guessing that it's more for the World Peace Diet type projects. And my question is, for the Ann Arbor Veg Week that we're trying to get going for April,
great.
We're going to send in a grant proposal for that. But I'm thinking maybe we should just bypass the World Peace Earth and go straight to the Pollination Project with that. And do you have any input on that?
Yes, I think that's a great question, and I'm glad you brought it up. And I really encourage everyone, if you're listening to this call, you can probably think of something you could do to help spread the vegan message in your community in some way. And if you put together an idea of some kind, like what Rebecca's talking about, there's so many different things that we can do. Put on a cooking class or put on a festival or a fair or put on something. But anyway, there's basically one fellow who's the benefactor who has money, who's a vegan, who loves the World Peace Diet, and would like to help people get this message out. And he, you know, it's a burden when you have a lot of money. You know, what do you do with it? And so he wants to give it to people who are spreading the vegan message. And so basically, he with Mark Stroud, Mark and Anna in Cincinnati, he gave them a certain amount of money that they could give out to projects that are sort of things that they think are good, and they have certain criteria that they go on, things that they would like to fund, and I really have no idea what they are exactly. But I think in general, it's a good idea if you're interested in applying for these mini grants. They're basically $1,000, although you can apply for more if you'd like, that you just apply directly to the Pollination Project, because they're the ones that really are giving the money, and so that's the I've given you that website before. I won't give it out right now unless somebody wants it. But
is this thepollinationproject.org?
Let me tell you, I'm looking it up. It was a little confusing to me when I went to the Pollination Project. I might have to tell you what it is later. But basically, Pollination Project here.
You can go to Pollination Project is something else, but thepollinationproject.org is
where I get you? Okay. Yeah, what I have, if anybody wants to know, is thepollinationproject.wordpress.com. I know that works. That's what I use.
Okay.
ThePollinationProject.wordpress.com. That works. But, yeah, what you're saying very well could work, too, because there are other pollination projects, and it can be confusing if you get to the wrong one. But this pollination project, which is a vegan, primarily vegan benefactor, you know, wants to fund these projects. So I would say go ahead and go to that website and fill it out. And also, I am one. If you go to that website, you can actually look under people that they call ambassadors, and there are maybe 7 or 8 or something like that, people that they have named as ambassadors, and I'm one of those people who they are specifically inviting to recommend people. So if you apply, let me know, and I can recommend you, and it doesn't guarantee that you will be funded, but they've told me that it definitely increases your chances of being funded. So it's a good opportunity. I think it's, you know, if you have put together, have an idea, and if it's something that's, you know, basically worthy, you'll probably definitely get the money. And it's pretty much no strings attached. You just, you know, use it and spread the money, spread the message. So I think, you know, it's a great opportunity, and they really want to give the money away. They've got it, and they don't have enough people applying, in a sense. So that's why I'm kind of encouraging people to do it, because I think it's a great opportunity. So does that answer your question more or less?
So you think it's best to go straight then to the Pollination Project and bypass the World Peace Earth?
Probably. Yeah, that's what I would do anyway.
Okay. Thanks.
Unless I hear anything else, but that's what I think. That's what I would suggest. Yep.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work you're doing. Actually, before you go, are you still there on the line?
Yep, I'm here.
Maybe could you just tell the folks because I think it's kind of a neat thing. Maybe a little bit. About what your idea is to do there in Manchester, Michigan, which is kind of outside Ann Arbor, if I remember.
Right. Well, my idea was just to have a cooking class for my community because I know there are people that are interested. The Ann Arbor Veg Week is something that a group of us who are members of Veg Michigan are planning in conjunction with Veg Michigan. It's kind of an offshoot, so it's not really all theirs, I think. I think we have a Ann Arbor group. But we're planning a week-long, and we don't know what's going to happen this first year of it, but it's something we want to be an annual event. And we're starting off with a kickoff, a talk from our mayor and a proclamation he's going to read. And then have people sign up, pledge to go vegan for the week, and we're trying to get restaurants that normally don't have vegetarian or vegan menus to add some dishes in for the week. We're planning John Sally is going to come and speak.
We're getting John Sally?
Oh, yeah, we always get John Sally because he's a supporter of Veg Michigan.
And, he lives probably in the area, maybe. I mean, that's
yeah. He's Detroit, right?
Uh-huh.
I know nothing about basketball, but I think that's where he played.
Wow.
And then, he is often speaks at the Veg Fest, the big Veg Michigan Veg Fest.
Right.
So he's speaking. We've got a environmental speaker who right now I can't remember the name of. we're gonna have a showing of Forks Over Knives. Hopefully, perhaps with Rip Esselstyn as part of a panel. We have a cardiologist coming to talk after the movie. And then we're planning some grocery store tours. And Andrew Kirshner, I don't know if you know who he is. He's a big vegan guy down in Florida, and he does a lot of stuff on his own. And he recently did a Whole Foods block party, he called it a vegan block party, where they just, for 2 hours, they had vegan dishes all over the store.
Really?
And they promoted it and had people come and sample all these different dishes and foods. And we want to do something like that. I don't know if we're going to pull off all this stuff, but we have a week long, and then culminating hopefully with a potluck. But we're trying to find venues and, you know, get our lineup done. And like I said, I don't know what we're going to get done the first year, but hopefully it's going to be something that grows every year.
Right. That's the great thing about these things. You just do something, you know, the first year, and then you'll get some more people usually energized. And then the second year it builds and spreads. And every year it gets bigger and better, typically, and very often. Right. So that's Great. Great to hear. Well, thanks so much for sharing with us some of those ideas. I like that, the idea of a vegan block party in a supermarket that's open to that, and you can really help them to help people to try things out and get recipes and learn about what's going on.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much. It's great to hear from you, Rebecca. Thanks.
Sure.
Sharing all that. All right. So we have Tara, you have your hand up. So I'll go ahead and, are you there?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound like you're in a cave a little bit.
Yeah, I'm Skyping. My line gets dropped, so it's kind of my only choice from this location.
Okay, well, I think we can hear you.
Hi, good to hear your voice. I wanted to tell you that your video, your gratitude and breathing in gratitude and breathing out love gratitude video is so infused with loving kindness. Thank you. It's really beautiful.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for saying that.
Really, really nice.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to tell Rebecca, your event sounds incredible. I'm amazed that you're able to get the people there, and the block party also does sound wonderful. And I wanted to clarify some of the pollination project information that you were talking about. First of all, the domain name will now, as of only a few days ago, is thepollinationproject.org.
Okay, good.
Yeah. If you go to the old domain name, you'll get there still without any problem. However, it has been switched to thepollinationproject.org. And Rebecca, my recommendation is to go to the apply button and read the funding guidelines and the frequently asked questions and the requirements real thoroughly before actually filling out your application. They're very, very specific about what they will fund, and that will save you a lot of time and effort. And maybe you can, you know, adjust exactly how you're doing things by reading those funding guidelines, by understanding their perspective more.
That's good to know. Thanks for saying that. That's great. Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome.
Right. Yeah, that's really helpful, you know, because there's so many different possibilities that we can do, and it's good to pick something that obviously, at least if you want to get funding.
Right, and they're all
excellent.
You can
still do it.
All of our ideas are incredible, and your original idea, Rebecca, was incredible. It's just that I've finally understood that, you know, their perspective is that they've got guidelines, and that's what we need to understand. It's not just, you know, what we'd like to do. It's what they'd like to fund. So reading those very clearly, then you'll understand. You'll get it.
Great. All right. Well, thanks so much for clarifying things, Tara. I really appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. Anything else, or is that it? Is that pretty much it, what you wanted to say?
That's all.
Okay. Great. All right. Thanks. Talk to you later. Thank you. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So there's also, just to mention this, if anyone is thinking of doing something in your community or working together with maybe with two other people in some way, Jacksonville, Florida, last year, I think for the first year, they had a month-long vegan event called in the month of March. So it was called No Meat March. And I actually was one of the speakers for that. And because we were in Florida last year, and it went really well, and they're back at it again this year. They wanted us to come and speak again this year. We won't be able to this year, but it's one of those things where they have a whole program of things that runs for a month. They get restaurants on board and local health food stores and so forth on board to promote veganism, and there's speakers, there's all kinds of giveaways and different things, and people sponsor, a lot of the businesses sponsor something. You can look it up online and see what they're doing this year, but that's another sort of a template idea. It's good to see what other people are doing, and you can get a lot of ideas from them. All right, so I don't see any other hands up, at this point. And I was going to actually, before we go any further, I wanted to talk to Steve just quickly here maybe. Steve has been working really hard on VegWorld, as I think you're probably all aware. VegWorld magazine launched, I think it was, when was it, Steve, in October, September?
August.
October?
So August.
Oh, in
1st.
August. It was in August.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's great. So anyway, I just love, yeah, it's fantastic. So can you just maybe tell us a little bit about how it's going, if you need anything from any people who are in the Ropeside Circle, and just some maybe a little bit more. You're such an amazing resource for creative ideas and experience in bringing the vegan message to people, especially through the Internet. So I just thought I'd like to see if you had anything to say about VegWorld or anything else you're working on.
Sure, Will. Yeah, and the magazine is just going incredibly well. It's since we launched 6 months ago, consistently every day, even I just checked now, we're listed as number 3 What's Hot magazine in Apple's iTunes under the health section. It's a top grossing magazine, and every day we're getting more and more subscribers, and the reviews are unbelievable, like 5-star reviews pretty much straight across the board on iTunes, and people just can't wait for the next issue, and we're just really integrating all the technologies. We've talked about it before, and I know everyone here knows what this magazine is, and we made it available. We built out a website, which we talked about last week, or last month, right, when we talked about marketing.
Right, website, your new website, yeah.
So we created opportunity for you don't have to be on an iPad, which is why the magazine was created for an iPad, but we made it for all platforms. So that's, you know, expanded the vision of what can be done with this magazine. And it's growing. It's, you know, we're very small. It's me and Julie, my wife, pretty much doing mostly everything at this point. And luckily we got a couple of grants that are really going to help in the process. And one, thank you to Mark and everybody, Will, everybody over at the Pollination Project and World Peace Earth for that grant. And we got a grant from A Well-Fed World. So but we're able to get some support now that we need. And what we're really looking for right now is an article compiler. It's somebody each month to contact our amazing authors, you know, and connect and get their articles for the month and get it into our Dropbox, which is an online kind of way to get the files together. So if anyone's interested in a position like that, just send me an email. We had somebody in that position and it didn't work out, so that position is open right now. And it's, you know, an entry-level part-time position, but it with great potential to grow, because this magazine is without a doubt growing. In 6 months, it's amazing where we are now. So if you get in on the ground level with us and grow with us, there'll be a lot of really good potential in the future to be part of a magazine that's going to be really big in the vegan world. I mean, it's getting there already. So
that's
please
so
send me an email if you're interested.
Wow, it's a great opportunity, Steve. if you'd like it yourself, or if you know someone who would be who's, you know, on top of things, who has good word skills and so forth, I guess what you really need, organizational skills.
Exactly.
Yeah. And who's vegan, hopefully. That would be better.
Yeah, and understands, the vegan world and all
the
amazing people in it.
Right.
Exactly.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Great. All right, Steve. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much it for now? Or?
I think that's it for now.
Okay, great. Awesome.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you. Thanks so much. All right, so we have someone has their hand up and has a question from Houston, Texas, go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Okay. Hey, Will. Nice to talk with you. And
hi.
I'd like to thank Rebecca and Tara and Steve and you and everyone else who is maybe quietly contributing, and we'll talk later. My question is different than anything that anyone has talked about so far, but maybe it's come up in the past and maybe will in the future. So, okay, and this is, I wouldn't want this talked about among this community or outside this community of callers, listeners, because you just never know who it's going to end up affecting or being hurt by.
Right.
I have a friend who has some chickens. Well, he has a vegetable and fruit farm that's doing very well. They sell their produce and a lot of acreage, I guess, and good quality organic crops. And over the past several months, I don't know how many, more than one person has given him chickens that they no longer want, who they no longer want. Chickens are not that, they're who.
Right.
And so he has taken these chickens in and made it so that they are very well cared for. They have total freedom. And I guess they're protected from any predators. And one is right now roosting and or brooding, whatever you call it, and maybe laying some eggs or some chicks. And he does have roosters too. So he thinks of it as a mutually beneficial relationship because the chickens eat the insects that need to be eaten and maybe supply manure, and then they get a good, very good life.
And they supply eggs too, I'm assuming.
And, oh, yes, I forgot. They do, both to the family, and I guess some are sold, but not to the extent that they are the primary income drivers. Now this person is thinking of goats. They do not want to do, oh, and they're never going to kill their chickens. They love their chickens. They've learned to love them, and they want to see how old they can get, naturally aging and just passing away happily. So they don't want cows or pigs because they can't see a way to doing right by those animals and keeping them around forever. But goats, they're considering for goat milk and I guess goat cheese. And so I raised the question, well, what do you think about taking the baby away from the mother and the baby doesn't get the milk? And today, though, a friend of mine who knows a lot about human, what's that thing called? The breastfeeding, you know, that group.
The Laleche.
Yes, that. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, if the animal, and she's vegan, by the way, if the animal is treated well and knows it, then they are apt to produce more than enough milk for just the kid or the babies. I don't know if they have more than one baby at a time. I didn't look that up. So I'm going, oh, okay, well, maybe he knows that. Maybe he's thinking that he can be kind to the. And also he would be using these goats to mow the lawn and possibly rent them out to neighbors to mow their lawn. So he sees income in it, but he also wants it to be as pleasant as possible for them, not to be family members, but next best thing. And I don't know if he's going to name them or not. He's named some of his chickens, but not all of them. So here we have this potential extra business that has yet to happen. And when I explained my feelings about the baby and mother relationship, the bond, and the, just the exploitation in general angle of animals, the answer was that, well, wet nursing is accepted by societies and a couple other things I don't remember that this person said. So I just wondered, I don't want to alienate this person. I don't want to come back with a bunch of rational reasons or logical reasons why he should think further. I did suggest he read your book and maybe one or two other things, but it was a very quick response on his part, meaning he hadn't thought it through at all from the point of view of the animals or the mother or the baby. And so I don't know if that's just because of a cultural conditioning,
yeah,
or if it's because he really likes the idea of the extra money, or just he wants to try it regardless of, just so he can say he did try it. I'm done.
So do you have a question here, or you kind of said the situation? You want to know what you should do in this situation? I mean, if there's a way to talk to him in a way that would change his mind away from, say, buying these goats? Is that the idea?
I think that's the idea, although it might be better not to say anything and just let him do what he feels he wants to do. And in that case, I don't want to become an enemy and walk away. I want to still be encouraging. And maybe it's possible to have this one ideal farm with this one ideal relationship that most don't have, but I just don't picture that.
All right. Well, a couple of things come to mind here. It sounds like, first of all, this fellow obviously is not a vegan, probably not even a vegetarian. So he's eating meat, dairy, and eggs in his kitchen.
But he is thinking about the fact that it does harm them and is thinking that part through more carefully.
Oh, okay. All right. So he's thinking about the suffering he's causing to pigs and cows and chickens and so forth, and trying to he's thinking about it. I guess that's all we can say. So
and experimenting this month with being 3/4 vegan.
Okay, all right. So he's doing an experiment, trying it out. Oh, that's something. Okay, so he's doing. Being 3/4 vegan, so that means, I guess, no, he's eating some butter and some eggs, something like that.
For the month only. I don't know what's going to happen after this month, yes.
Right. So, but that's something. One thing, I guess, you know, as all of you probably know, there's a video that sort of seems tailor-made for this situation, which is the a video called Peaceable Kingdom, A Journey Home, which has in their features these two people, Jim and Sherry, I think their names are, who were goat farmers up in Massachusetts. And I met Jim. I was there last summer and gave a lecture at Maple. It's called Maple Farm Sanctuary now. It used to be Maple Farm Dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had cows, but they started not thinking. They got away from the cows, and he was like the, you know, fifth or sixth generation dairy farmer. He went back forever, and he was a veterinarian or veterinarian's assistant, I think. But she's very good with animals, and they got married, and then she didn't like the cow thing, so they went to the goats, and they did goats for years, and gradually got more and more disturbed by the fact that they would there was just too many goats being born, and they'd have to send them off, the males typically, and they finally went and those of you who have seen the movie know that they actually watched one of their baby goats having his throat sliced, and that was it for them. They went back and they sold the whole. They were able to give the goats to sanctuaries, and they kept some of them themselves and created a sanctuary. And it's a really nice place. I mean, it's Maple Farm Sanctuary, and they have visitors coming, and they put on programs. Like I say, they put on a program there. We had a pretty good crowd. Like, gave a lecture on the World Peace Diet, and they're very avid vegans themselves now, which they weren't before, obviously. And so they made a complete transformation. And I think the thing that has the most weight probably with someone like the man you're talking about is just a story, you know, just telling a story. There's no, you cannot argue with a story. You can argue with everything else, but if someone tells a story, they can hear the story, and you could either, if he doesn't want to watch the video, maybe just mention that story. There's also I think more and more it's being understood that that owning animals in itself is an act of violence. Just the idea that this animal is my property, I'm owner.
Mm-hmm.
In defense of animals, I just wrote something for them, but they're it's an organization based in Marin County, California, and they have something called the Guardian Campaign, which is basically to completely, eventually, hopefully, eliminate the concept of ownership of animals, starting with dogs, typically dogs and cats and pets, and changing the word legally from owner to guardian. And there's been quite a few towns and some counties and even one state that have actually done that. And the idea here is that owning an animal and violence toward the animal go hand in hand. That if someone thinks that this is just my property and property doesn't have rights, so they don't have interests. They just are something that I can use. And so veganism and non-ownership of animals, I think, are the essential goals that are on the horizon for us to work toward more and more. And I think it's beginning to be understood more and more. So in terms of your question, my sense simply is to, since you, it sounds like you're very sensitive to not wanting to bug this guy, to work with him in a way that he feels that you're his friend and you're not threatening him, then in some way to tell this particular story in some way, if that's possibly just to see the video or if you can talk to him or write it out or something like that, something to consider. And then the other thing is there's also, like, for example, I just saw something today that I'll read a little bit of it. I have it in February's resources, so for resources next month. But this is written by exactly the kind of person, in a sense, that you're talking about. Stony Brook Farm in upstate New York, extremely happy meat kind of place. I mean, it's meat, but it's he raises pigs. He's a pig farmer. And I think, if people see this, someone like him writing what he writes, it's the kind of thing that would make them, because if he's he's an animal farmer, he owns chickens, and he's selling their eggs, and now he wants to sell them the milk of these goats. These are, in a way, the hardest people to have see something, because they're making money from it. And so, but what this fellow says, I'll just read a little bit of it. It's fascinating. It's actually a pretty short article, but he says he wrote a blog a few months ago called The Grapple of Ethics. He says, when I think about the debate surrounding the ethics of eating meat, I think one thing only. Why is it so hard for meat eaters to admit that killing animals to eat their flesh is unethical? Truly, there is no sound ethical argument in favor of slaughtering animals for their meat, be they sentient or not. It is as unethical to slaughter a pig as it is a fish. The simplest way to put it is that slaughter is a socially permissible ethical transgression. Societal permission does not make it ethical. It makes it acceptable, non-punishable. Mm-hmm. Slavery was for centuries socially permissible, in spite of the fact that there was always a minority standing firmly against it. Did that make it any less unethical? I doubt anyone today, a time when it is socially unpermissible, would say yes. As a pig farmer, I live an unethical life, shrouded in the justificatory trappings of social acceptance. There is more, even, than acceptance. There is celebration because of the way I farm the pigs, because I give the pigs lives that are as close to natural as is possible in an unnatural system. I am honorable. I am just. I am humane. While all the while behind the shroud, I am a slaveholder and I am a murderer. Looking head on, you cannot see it. You have to look askance, just like a pig does when it knows you are up to no good. Out of the corner of your eye, in the blurry periphery of your vision, something dark and even evil lurks. It is the truth. Meat is indeed murder. Someday we will know this and accept this as well and as much as we know and accept the evil of slavery. But until that day, I am and will remain a paragon of animal welfare. Pigs on my farm are as piggy as Pygmus. They are Plato's pig, the ideal form of the pig. They root, they lounge, they narf, they eat, they forage, they sleep, they wallow, they bask, they run, they play, and they die unconsciously, without pain or suffering. I suffer their death more than they. The grapple of ethics hooks us, and we begin to struggle when we look askance. Do please look askance. See through the blurry shroud of the false legitimacy of the bucolic alternative to factory farming, an alternative that is but another obfuscating layer of the justificatory shroud. Look askance and see who and what I am. Look askance and see who and what the animals are. Look askance and see what is on your plate. Look askance and see what see that society acceptably says yes. Ethics universally, unequivocally, and I believe undeniably, says no. What I do is wrong. I know it in my bones, even if I cannot yet act on it. Someday it must stop. Somehow we need to become the sort of beings who can see what we are doing when we look head on, the sort of beings who don't weave dark, damning shrouds to sustain with acceptance and celebration the grossly unethical solely for shallow, sensual pleasure. Deeper, much deeper, we have an obligation to eat otherwise. What we are doing, well, he closes saying, it might take incalculable generations of being hooked by and grappling with the ethics of slaughter to get there, but we really do need to get there because, again, what I am doing, what we are doing is wrong. And he wrote this for other farmers. He did not write this for the public. He wrote this. This is a blog he has for farmers. So I think he says, you know, I think it's astonishing that he could write this in a way as a pig farmer. But it's pointing directly at what we're talking about here. And I think, you know, this is the kind of thing that your friend might find interesting, coming from one farmer to another, to help him grapple with the ethics of this, because there is suffering. You know, when you own a being like these goats that he wants to own, the whole idea, it always starts out nice. You know, it always starts out, well, we're just going to have a few goats and they're going to eat the grass. It's kind of like, you know, we're going to use them and they'll give us what we want and we'll take care of them. And then there's this idea that, you know, you need to take their milk and you still leave some for the babies, but you're taking their milk. And you're breeding them, not when they want to be bred, but when you want to breed them. And you do with their babies what you want to do, and you manage them. It's completely managed, and they don't have their life. The basic thing that is stolen from them, which is the most precious thing any being has, is their sovereignty. Now, they're not allowed to, they're not living their lives as they did for millions of years in nature. And they're confined, and they're on someone else's schedule, and they can't live their lives, and that is inherently a form of suffering. No one wants, that's called prison. I mean, you know, you put somebody in jail, you can feed them, and you can say, well, they're protected, they have a better life than they would out in the dangerous world, but it's a punishment. It's the worst thing you can do. So, you know, we used to say the same thing about black people, and how much better it is, you know, for them to be working in the cotton fields and running around like animals in Africa. That's what we said, you know, back 150 years ago. But it was just in order to justify our greedy, selfish ways, essentially. We don't need goat milk. We don't need any of this stuff. We can cut our own lawn and so forth. And I think it's something not to be judgmental. I mean, this guy, it's great that he's moving in that direction, but I think it's always helpful to just plant seeds of questioning. That's what I would say. I mean, I think, you know, in a loving way, you know,
yes,
really, because he's far ahead of, you know, most people, you know,
yes,
a lot of ways, it sounds
definitely.
Like, you know,
he
so you don't want to be,
do...
you know, judging him. You know, if everybody was like him, it'd be a lot better world. So, you know, that's good to be aware of. But just, to, again, not to stop there, to realize that going vegan is really the way out of this for everyone. We can create a much healthier world on every level. Once we see once we allow animals to live their lives, and we sustain ourselves without enslaving them, imprisoning them, and you owning them, essentially. So that's a great question, though. And I'll this link, it'll be in the resources. Send me an email. I can send you the link if you want to get it, you know, sooner. Anybody.
Thank you.
That's all.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. Anything else or you want to mention? Or... Good. All right. So let's see. We have a hand up here. Rebecca, you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say some things to the lady who just spoke, and I don't remember her name, sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. I hung up actually accidentally when she was introducing herself. But just some more ideas of what to tell the guy without being too confrontational. I was going to actually, I raised my hand to say, give him the peaceable kingdom journey home, because that's exactly, you know, that part is so poignant, and it just shows you the reality. And people have this idea that they're going to have this, you know, they have this little bucolic fantasy of how they're going to have their little goats. And I mean, how many goats is he going to get? Do they know that they're going to get? And goats, by the way, do have often have two and two kids. for each pregnancy. And what are they going to do with all the goats? I mean, because they've got to have goats every year to have the
Right.
Milk.
They'll dry up. They'll basically dry up. I mean, they won't. They won't. They'll be giving so little milk. If you, you know, pretty much they'll stop giving milk. So you've got to impregnate them again, and so there's going to be more and more babies. And I've
seen. And where is he going to keep
these places, them? You know? Yeah, exactly. This one guy was joking with me. He said, "Well, we name the male. With the males, we always name them drum, because they're going to become a drum." And, you know, in a sense, you know, he said it's just the way it is. You know, it's they're not going to, we can't keep them. We can't feed them. It's going to get too expensive eventually. I mean, it creates, but I'm going to write an article about this because I've been getting letters. I get a letter from a woman who's really, the Hare Krishna people have a farm in West Virginia, and they really are very adamant that what they're doing with their dairy is definitely a loving, wonderful thing. And so I'm going to be writing an article. Hopefully, by next month, it'll address this whole dairy thing a little bit more in depth.
Yeah, I just want to know what people think they're going to do with all the animals. I mean, you have a finite amount of space, I would think. And are you just going to keep cramming them in there year after year if you don't slaughter them?
Right.
Where do you have room for them? Are you going to give them away, like the horrible part in the movie where she said that somebody just picked up the little goat and tossed
right.
him into the truck, tossed him
right.
into the back of the truck? Are you gonna castrate the males? Because if you don't, they're really stinky.
Right. That's a good point.
And they're going to want to be mating. I mean, this guy doesn't sound like he knows how to deal with animals at all. And he's got this little fantasy, and he needs to wake up to the reality of what's going to happen. But I think that movie would be a good introduction to it. But I think, too, I mean, what I read on the internet all the time is people saying all the time, well, you know, now I'm a vegan, but I didn't even realize cows had to be pregnant. I mean, that people just don't know this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's sort of like informal polls that have been taken. It's sort of like half the people that are asked about this don't even, never occur to them that cows give milk because they're impregnated. People think cows just give milk. That's their nature. They just sort of start giving milk for no reason.
And I once back in my you know, animal production days and my, you know, my years of becoming a vet tech, I thought at one point, oh, you know, goat dairy, I love goats. Maybe I could have a goat dairy. Well, I went online and looked at pictures of these dairy goats, and I decided right then and there, and this was long before I became a vegan, I said, no way would I do that. They look so ridiculous. Their udders are so engorged. It's just so unnatural. And
Especially
I said
bread?
Then, I could never do that. What'd you say?
Are they specially bred then? I guess they must be, obviously.
I think it's kind of the same thing that's happening with the cows, that they breed them for high production, and they're so grossly disfigured. It's just not normal. It's not natural. And I saw that, and even then, in my pre-vegan days, I said, no, I would never do that to another animal.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't.
Wow.
And, so that got me out of that idea. But, you know, and then I have friends, too, that I don't know why they love animals and they've got a whole menagerie. And, of course, they still eat meat and everything, too, right? But they recently got some little goats. And I think these were probably cast off from a dairy because they got these goats when they were a couple of weeks old. They were nowhere near being weaned. And the person just dumped them on them. I mean, well, she didn't. They wanted the goats, but this person was trying to get rid of the kids that she all of a sudden had because she didn't know that she was going to have all these kids she had to get rid of. So she luckily found some people that wanted some goats, but she gave them to them. And they weren't even approaching being weaned. So here they had these goats the first night who were screaming and crying. They'd never been bottle fed. And they just were yanked away from their mother. And,
wow.
Horrible.
So much suffering. Yeah, it is. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Rebecca. It's good to get perspective of someone who's really been there as a vet tech and as someone. I know you were kind of in the animal agriculture industry in your younger years, I think, if I remember reading something.
Well, no, I went to school, so and it wasn't all that younger. I was 40 when I started, and and amazed totally at what I didn't know and what people don't know. I mean, and I was somebody who grew up around animals pretty much, but, you know, and then when I think of people that don't even, you know, they live in cities, they never see an animal besides a dog or a cat, the misinformation is just staggering.
Right, yeah. Great. Okay, well, thanks for sharing that. I think that will be helpful, too. That's very good to know. Thanks. Great. Okay, we have Pamela from Washington.
Hey, Will. Hi, everybody.
Yeah,
I just want to call in because with Rebecca's comment on, you know, so many people aren't aware that cows have to have given birth to give milk. I've been doing a living social and a group on healthy eating class. So I've gotten about 400 people coming through those classes. And I thought from the very beginning, I want to do a little survey. And so I keep the class pretty light, but then I do ask, you know, by the way, how many of you know that cows have to have given birth to give milk? And my little sketches, because I take notes at each class, it's been about 50%. Maybe
50%?
50% people, and I can tell by the look on their face, too. At first, I was trying to phrase the question in a way that I wouldn't give it away, but all I had to do was just throw the question out there and look at their face. And when I looked at their face, most people, well, half of the people, were just looking at me like, what? I had a 60-year-old guy one time. It was like telling him Santa Claus didn't exist. And he was just like, what, really? And it's just amazing to see that. And I actually did a videotape of one of those classes, but in that particular class, most of the people knew that cows had to be pregnant to give milk. But it's been really interesting. And one woman in my class said she brought up the subject of this older toddler who was still breastfeeding, like at 3 years old. And so I got together with a friend of mine. We made kind of this funny clip, a video clip on, you know, the whole thing of, oh, my God, can you believe that child was breastfeeding at 3 years old? And then we're, like, eating ice cream and drinking milk and everything. And then it's just kind of a spoof to lead into, well, what are we doing? And then my friend is going, well, at least I'm not, you know, drinking human milk, and then we show that picture of the guy in a suit, like, drinking from a cow's udder. And we're just kind of trying to inform the public and not make them wrong. And I say, my dad was on the board of directors for the Mid-American Dairymen Association. I grew up on a dairy farm, so I know. And I say, you know, it's really not so much your fault because we've been indoctrinated that cows give milk. And then people don't feel so stupid, you know, because a lot of them are just going, half the class is going, didn't you know that? And the other half is going, no. So it's really been a very interesting psychological field trip out there.
Well, good for you. I'm so glad that you're actually conducting this informal survey, and we're learning that, at least from what you're seeing, and I think it's probably pretty true. I think the average person never thinks about this, rarely does. We're just taught that cows give milk, and it's healthy, and you need to drink it for your bones, and it tastes good, and ice cream. Who could live without ice cream?
Yeah,
and
right.
That's the cow's gift to us, God's gift to us through the cow or something like that. And wow, you've made quite a journey.
I'd love to get some feedback on those videos because both him and I are like, I don't know, would people think this is funny or would they get it or what? So if people go to elementalcuisine.com and down at the bottom is a YouTube icon, they're under there. We made one about eggs, and we're going to do another one tomorrow about, quote, organic slaughterhouses. And just, you know, we're playing the kind of uninformed people, and we're trying to keep it light but yet inform people. So any comments, I'd love to hear if we should even pursue this or not.
All right, so I'm just going to repeat that. So everybody, get your pencils if you have them handy. So we're talking about www.elementalcuisine.com is the website,
yes.
And you have one video up there now, and you're going to have another one up tomorrow, something like that?
Actually, if they go to the bottom of the page where you see the YouTube icon, that will take you right to my YouTube site, and there are 60 videos up there. But if you look for Milk Reality and Egg Reality, those two are the two that I'd love to get some feedback on.
Milk Reality and Egg Reality. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Good for you.
And soon to come is Slaughterhouse Reality. And we looked at jobmonkey.com, and there was an ad for people to come work at their slaughterhouse. And it's just chilling to read that description of what, you know, they're trying to get people to come in and work for their slaughterhouse. So we're going to say, hey, you know, I need a job, and I'm trying to get into organics, and, hey, here's a job. So we don't know how that's going to go yet, but we're gonna play with it.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, I'll put it up on the February resources, but now everybody at least has a chance, if you want, if you're interested, you can, everybody, check out Pamela's website, the YouTube, Milk Reality and Egg Reality, and give feedback. That's a great idea.
Yeah, thanks a lot for doing that.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the input. All right. So also, before we travel farther here, boy, there's a few things that I'm thinking going through my mind from these ideas. But basically, when we start getting into dairy, I think we're getting into one of the most brutal forms of imprisonment of animals. And there's actually this nice quote at the beginning, just by chance, of the January resources that you all got today by James McWilliams. I'm not sure if you're familiar with James McWilliams, but he's been writing a lot lately. He's a professor somewhere, I think, in Texas, and he's been getting his he's gone vegan, and he's quite articulate and writes opinion pieces for the New York Times and other venues, and he wrote this: "I became a vegan the day I watched a video of a calf being born on a factory farm. The baby was dragged away from his mother before he hit the ground. The helpless calf strained its head backward to find his mother. The mother bolted after her son and exploded into a rage when the rancher slammed the gate on her. She wailed the saddest noise I'd ever heard an animal make, and then thrashed and dug into the ground, burying her face in the muddy placenta. I had no idea what was happening, respecting brain chemistry, animal instinct, or whatever. I just knew that this was deeply wrong. I just knew that such suffering could never be worth the taste of milk and veal. I empathized with the cow and the calf, and in so doing, my life changed." I think that's such a beautiful story. Again, it's a story. He's just telling a story. He's not saying, you know, any kind of ethical thing. He's just telling the story of what he experienced. And I think that's probably the most powerful way we can do it, really, is to tell a story. And I quite often hear, for example, from dairy people from India, because I work a lot with Indian Jains, the Jains and others, and there's this whole thing when I talk to them that you don't understand. In India, the cow is part of the family. We love the cow. We take care of the cows. It's a beneficial relationship. We help them. They help us. It's, you know, there's this whole thing. It's not like here in America and so forth. And yet, you know, it basically, it's just not true, basically. I mean, it's in fact, there's a fellow who went to India who's a Jain who became vegan, and it's kind of unusual for Jains to become vegans, but there's more and more of them doing it just because they realize that as Jains, the fundamental teaching is ahimsa, which is nonviolence, and dairy is violence. So there's a nice movement within Jainism to go vegan. It's building, it's going every day, and he went around and interviewed and talked to small Indian dairy farmers and you know, who just have one or two cows. And he basically told me, you can just ask them two questions. They'll talk and talk and talk about how, you know, wonderful it is and everything. You just ask them two questions. You ask them, number one, you just say, what do you do with the males that are born to the cow? And they kind of get a little bit nervous, and they say they send them off the market. And the same thing essentially is when you say, what do you do when the cow just stops giving milk? Basically the same thing. They send them off to market, they let them go, and there's a lot of cows wandering around India that are starving because they've been just let go and they don't feed them anymore. So there's a lot of underlying cruelty. I think that, you know, that's what I want to, in a sense, explore, because there's this underlying teaching that you know, Krishna was a cow herd, and that cows, having cow's milk is essential to our livelihood. And even in the West, we have the land of milk and honey idea, that somehow God gives that heaven is, we drink milk in heaven, something like that. So I don't know if you have these heavenly cows up there or something. and it's so interesting, because honey is now, there's a great article I have it in here on the resources that someone wrote recently, basically comparing honey to dairy, because it's the enslavement and imprisonment of and stealing, basically, of secretions from dairy cows and also from bees that really need the honey, and we take it from them. So anyway, there's a lot of connections that the public still doesn't make here, but I think it's great to see this starting to happen more and more. We do have a question I just wanted to address here quickly that came in from Veronique, and this is actually for Steve, but just maybe that she had submitted an article for VegWorld a few weeks ago right after the last World Peace Diet Circle, and was wondering if you'd received it. And I just want to say to everyone, if you would like to write an article about something that has to do with veganism, and again, Steve has a theme every month, I think, Steve, you are open to receiving articles from people. Do you want to say a word about that?
Yeah, and I saw that, and I responded to that email. I think that I didn't receive that article. It got buried or something, but yeah, each month we have a theme, so you can always ask me what the upcoming theme is. Like for February, it's love and relationships and veganism, and we do a pick of the month. We're probably going to choose Veggie Date this month because it's a great opportunity to meet other vegans. And so the theme of the, you know, not every article is going to be about love and relationships, but it is the main central theme of that issue. And then we've got the vegan recipes and other thoughts and things like that. Veronique, your article is about Sandy Hook and the devastation going on there. I don't know if it's going to fit into this issue, and if you can revise the end of it so it's, we can make it more evergreen, we can fit it into a different issue. That might work. But yeah,
right.
And anyone can email me, contact me through your email reminders. If you just reply, that goes into my box. And if you've got an article you've already written, we can republish it. Even if it's a blog post, we can republish it. And if you feel like it's something you want to get out there that might work in the format of the magazine, then we'd love to take a look at it.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So moving on here, I want to mention one thing just to say it. I just thought I'd say it, put it out there, that we live here in Northern California now temporarily. I mean, we're staying here for the So the summer, and then we're going to be heading back out on the road again. But we have a neighbor who's got a beautiful house, actually, and he's looking for someone to be a housemate there. So if anyone knows someone in this area that would like a place, I told him I would check with folks. It's be a good opportunity. He's a runs a pretty big sustainability website, and it'd be a nice, really nice place to be. You can send me an email if you're interested, if you know someone. So now I wanted to talk a little bit about the video that I just put up a couple of days ago, just briefly. The other question that Veronique had, or it wasn't more of a comment, she just said she really enjoyed that video. I decided, Mel and I really have an opportunity now. We have our grand piano out, and I can sit and play it, and it's something we haven't been able to do for 17 years. You know, we've been living 17 years in an RV, so we now have the opportunity to have our piano out of storage and to have a place where we can create a little bit more a life of music and art and connecting with a piece of a place here. And it's really wonderful. So anyway, that video that I made, the idea behind it, and I hope you've had a chance to watch it. If not, if you'd like to, it's in the membership section. It's kind of something I wanted to make especially for the World Peace Diet Circle participants. And the basic idea that came to me in meditation that I wanted to share with you through the video, which I think it comes through okay, but the idea is that we have, when we look deeply, I think, into the energy of the universe, we find there's always a flow, like when we breathe, we're exhaling, which is sort of the going out energy, and then we're inhaling, which is this turning within or coming in energy. In the Chinese tradition, they talk about yin and yang. I think we see this in the seasons of the earth, and we just see it everywhere. And it occurred to me that love essentially is this active power, this moving out into the world. It's seeing others with benevolence. It's doing what I can to care for them, protect them, give to them. It's the sense of giving and love. And that all of us, as manifestations of the universe, are essentially thrilled and fulfilled when we are loving, when we are able to give love, when we're able to be giving, when we're able to be creative, when we're able to care and protect for others, that this is something that is deeply fulfilling. And yet I think also it's important to tune into the fact that we receive constantly, we're receiving light from the sun, we're receiving air and water, we're receiving love from our families and so forth, and we're receiving food, and we're just, we're receiving a life, an opportunity of a human birth. And with this opportunity, it's an enormous gift that we've been given. So that besides love being natural to us, gratitude is natural to us. And I've been finding lately that just doing a meditation, either while sitting or while walking, on the exhalation, to just feel a sense of love and say perhaps, I love you, or the word love. And then on the inhalation, to say thank you or have a feeling of gratitude, that these two, I think, are the two fundamental healthy emotions that we can cultivate. And I've noticed in a lot of the discussions that we have as vegans with each other that there's an enormous amount of emotional stress that we feel as vegans. I think we feel a lot of emotional stress just living in our society, whether we're vegans or not. But I think as we become vegan, as we live a vegan life, we remove a lot of the cause of stress in the sense that we are living our lives more aligned with our values. And so there's a sense of coming home and really being more aware, more connected, more healthy, more happy, more aligned, more probably in some ways more grateful. But there's also a tendency among a lot of people who are vegans to feel alienated, isolated, sometimes mocked, made fun of, separated, whatever. There's a lot of vegans I've talked to feel this way. So there's a lot of negative emotion around being vegan and around the fact that, why don't people see it? Why do people refuse to even pay attention? You know, these are normally, I see this, you know, quite a bit, people say, you know, these are people I know, these are my friends. They're intelligent, they're aware, they're loving, they're conscious, they're kind to their kids, they're kind to their dogs. But and I tell them, they've even seen some, you know, they've seen videos, and they still eat meat. They still eat dairy. They still eat eggs. You know, what the heck is going on? Why don't people see what's going on? And you know, and we get so frustrated, and we can get into a dark place of feeling that we live in just a crazy world. And so I think that the most precious asset that we have, as not only as human beings, but also as advocates for a better world, as living examples of veganism and of how we can show up, basically, and embody vegan ideals, is our own mind. Our own mind is our greatest ally, and it can also, in some ways, I guess, be our greatest enemy, too. So to make sure that our mind is an ally, I think one of the most important things we can do is to take responsibility for our feelings, for our thoughts, and so forth, because we have a tendency, I think, to think that thoughts just come, you know, and they do. They just come, and they can kind of wipe us. They can just take us over. We can get anxious, afraid, worried, and so forth, but that we can, in a sense, stand porter at the door of our thoughts. You know, we can allow thoughts in or not allow them in, allow feelings in or not. I mean, you can feel feelings, but feelings really arise out of our thoughts. So to take time every day, as much as we can, to consciously cultivate positive emotions, I think will help us not only to live in a more harmonious world. I think we'll find that our relationships will get more harmonious, but it'll also be healthier for us on every level, and will create the possibility of others around us experiencing more happiness as well, because we're more happy. And I think really what veganism is essentially is us as vegans becoming the spiritual teachers of our culture. And that brings me, well, to two things. One is the meditation that you'll see there, where I just kind of take us through that. But the other is the article that I wrote recently, which I think you've all, perhaps, maybe you haven't seen it, but it's right at the beginning of the January Resources. It was just published a couple of days ago. Why Are Few Spiritual Leaders Vegan? Is the title. Why are so few of the spiritual leaders in our society vegan? What's going on? That's basically what I'm addressing. And I won't go into the whole thing, but basically the article is saying that the reason is because we live in a society where people who are not vegan are the vast majority. And so the old saying is, people always get the leaders they deserve. And the idea is that not only is that true politically, with political leaders, but it's also true with the spiritual leaders that we get. As we evolve more to a more aware, conscious, compassionate level, our spiritual leaders will also become more aware, conscious, and compassionate. And we're at a relatively low level, I think, in many ways in our society. So our spiritual leaders, they're the ones that, in a sense, we project, and we can resonate with them, and we like them, and we listen to them. We think they're great. And, of course, they don't say a word about veganism. If they did, we wouldn't like it. And we wouldn't think they were very good. We would think they were kind of judgmental, or they're kind of, you know, out to lunch or whatever. So that's why the spiritual leaders essentially are not vegan. We're just not ready for that as a society. Although I make the point in the article that is, in fact, changing. And we see that. We see it changing. We see more and more spiritual teachers who are recognized, have students and so forth, have a following, and they're teaching basically universal spiritual principles, that they are also beginning more and more to emphasize compassion to animals. I think that is happening, but I think we have a really long way to go. And so there's a lot more we can say about that. I mean, it's a big, huge conversation. But the basic sort of ending, one of the ending points in the article, which I'd like to sort of raise here now, is that as vegans, we are the spiritual leaders and teachers for our culture today, because what veganism is actually living the universal spiritual principles that all the religions have emphasized of the interconnectedness of all life, of benevolence and kindness and goodwill, justice, freedom, and peace, and awakening to the fact that what I am is not essentially a fundamentally separate self, that that I can do what I want and take what I want, that we are interconnected and that there's an ineffable loving presence that is the source of my life and the source of all life, and that joy and freedom and meaning come from awakening to that and living my life in alignment with that. And so as vegans, I think, you know, there's people who are vegan for many different reasons still, but the fundamental reason for being vegan is, as we use it in the World Peace Diet, which is the same way that the founder of veganism, Donald Watson, defined it, is to do it for the motivation of compassion for others, not for health or for environmental whatever, or because it's cheaper or because it's the in thing to do, but because of kindness and compassion for others. And that as we live that, everything begins to line up in our lives. We begin to connect more deeply, not only with what real health is, but also with becoming a force for the healing of our world. And I think that's why it's very important for us as vegans to make an effort to connect with the inner spiritual teacher that dwells in our own heart. It's always there, the inner guru or teacher or master or wisdom is within us. And as we quiet our mind, especially if we quiet the conditioned thinking in our mind, we begin to connect more deeply with that inner teacher, and then to also connect with the vegan community. I think that's very helpful. So we're not all alone, that we're working with others and combining our efforts together. We create, in the Buddhist tradition, they talk about a sangha, which is the community. In the Christian tradition, we talk about the church. Yeah, but there's a vegan community, and it's, I think it needs our support, it needs our input, it needs our cooperation, and it needs our inspiration, I think. A lot of people go vegan, and they go back to eating meat again because they didn't get supported, they didn't get validated, they didn't know how to do it, they didn't know how to make meals that were tasty, they had all these relatives, you know, pounding on them saying that they were stupid and they're going to be sick and they're going to, you know, die of a protein deficiency, calcium deficiency. And so it's very important for us, I think, to do the best we can to mentor other people. That's one of the best things we can do to contribute to the vegan community. And then also, I think, to begin to take our role as the spiritual leaders of our society, in some sense, that we do not have to look to other spiritual teachers. I mean, especially if they're not vegan, that there's something fundamentally missing if someone is still eating animal foods, no matter what they say in terms of their spiritual teaching. And to consciously bring this message into the huge array of religious traditions that are meeting and discussing issues. There's Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, Hindu, you know, agnostic, whatever it is. And to bring this message and to challenge, I think really to challenge the so-called established spiritual leaders and teachers to include this message. And to find ways of doing it that are, of course, appropriate, you know, to do it. And sometimes that'll feel, I think, using our intuition, that'll be confrontive, and sometimes it'll be very gentle. But to challenge, and then if they won't change, then, as I say in the article, to create our own traditions. And I think we see that happening more and more, new movements and new traditions that are explicitly vegan are happening. So I'm hoping that I'm really excited, actually, about this bringing more and more of the spiritual dimension of veganism into the world, and I think it's going to do nothing but continue to grow. And one of the reasons I think that you all perhaps hear on this call is because you share this interest in the spiritual dimension of life. And I think veganism is indispensable, really, to a spiritual path, because it's the underlying walking the walk and doing the best that I can, because some of the other things that we do are sort of theoretical. You know, theoretically I'm forgiving, and theoretical I'm patient, and theoretically, but being a vegan is actual. So what are you actually eating, and what are you buying? It's something we actually, you know, can very easily see, and I think that's it's so concrete, and on the beginning stage anyway, and then as we go farther and farther into veganism, it becomes more universal, and we see that it really means living our lives as manifestations of loving kindness and compassion in all of our relationships with human beings, with non-human beings, future generations, and with everyone. So thank you all for listening to my my minor tirade there, but I wanted to kind of bring those ideas through in this January 2013 circle meeting. And if you have any questions or comments about what I just said, that would be great. But I also realize that it's getting very late. It's now in the Eastern time zone. It's 10:30 practically. So I think it's probably a good idea to begin to wrap it up. I want to thank all of you for joining us. I really see wonderful things continuing to happen in the movement toward a more compassionate and sustainable world. And in the resources that you're all getting, there's a lot of resources this month. I mean, it's 4 pages worth. And you just look at some of these articles and things. We have, I'll draw your attention just very briefly here, just a couple of them. One is our own Megan Cacciatani, she's very often with us here on the circle. She's a World Peace Life Facilitator. She just made a presentation on TEDx. Which is really gets the vegan message out there in a very nice way. There's some great articles about animal liberation. There's just so many new videos emerging. There's a new the television is being taken over by vegan programming. It's amazing to see. Jason Robel has got a vegan cooking class now on that's called Live to Be 100. Juliana Heaver, we interviewed her for Vegan Palooza last July. She has her own TV show. I think it's called What Would Juliana Do? And she's talking about food, nutrition, health, relationships, everything. By the way, we wanted to mention, Steve and I are going to be doing Vegan Palooza again. It was the largest vegan event ever in the history of the internet, maybe in the history of the world. I'm not sure. We had over 12,000 people on that vegan event last year. And we're going to do it again this year in the summer, probably late June, mid-June, somewhere in there. And we're going to need one or two volunteers to help out with a few things. We're going to definitely need some help with scheduling and stuff like that. So if you're interested in helping out in some way with Vegan Palooza, please let us know, because we can definitely use a little bit of help. But anyway, there's this, you know, Why the Word Vegan is More Powerful Than Ever is a very excellent article. How Do You Respond to Veganism is Extreme is another excellent article. There's some great, as I said, new videos. There's the Pollination Project, as I mentioned. And, U.S. News and World Report. You can't get more conservative than that. Business Week, Business Insider. Why plant-based diets are all the rage. I mean, it's even, it's amazing. It's just really 5 signs the plant-based diet is already winning in 2013. Apparently, the industry magazines have been saying, like the supermarket magazines, restaurant magazines, that by far in 2013, the biggest trend is toward plant-based meals. That's where everything's going. We're moving away from seeing meat as protein, going to plant-based protein. We're still have a long way to go. I just read today, actually, there's this beautiful short video of a humpback whale being rescued from a gillnet in the Sea of Cortez. The fishing industry is absolutely devastating the oceans. I read today that 300,000 whales and dolphins die every year in fishing nets. Can you imagine 300,000 are dying? We have the Sea Shepherd trying to protect a few, you know, a couple thousand. We have 300,000 dying from fishing nets. It's incredible what fishing is doing. The devastation of fishing is beyond what anyone can imagine. There's also this great survey. Jonathan Balcom is writing a book about fish sentience, and I encourage everyone to take the survey. I have it on page 2. There's so much here, really. I mean, it would probably take you a whole month to go through all this stuff, but I enjoy putting this together for everybody, so feel free to look through it and check some of the links. A cow in Germany, a cow escapes the slaughterhouse by diving into an icy pool, and she became a hero. Nobody wanted to let the cow be used for meat after that. You know how that is. And then the closing, the closing cartoon here is a guy looking through a McDonald's bag and with three other guys, and he's saying, okay, heart attack with extra cheese, heart attack with bacon, double bypass, no pickles. Hey, where's my diabetes and large stroke? We know. We're good friends with Dan Ferraro, actually. He's a great vegan cartoon maker. So, we have great stuff coming up for the Vegan Palooza in 2013. We're really excited about that, and lots of projects coming. We're going to be touring Southern California in June, and then a big United States tour later, probably starting in December, January, something like that. So if you'd like us to come to your area to give a talk, just let us know. And I think that's probably it for the moment. I think it's really probably too late to things just kind of – it's so funny, you know, how the time goes by here. But we had some very excellent, I think, questions and interaction. And I want to, again, thank all of you for joining us tonight on this call. Steve, do you have anything last thing before we begin to wrap it up here?
I think that about brings us to the end, Will. I think it was a great call and great hearing from everyone here.
Right. All right. Well, there's. Don't forget, in October, of course, we've got the World Peace Yoga Jubilee coming up. There's lots of opportunities with the Pollination Project to think about something you'd like to do, get a grant for it. If you have any questions, of course, at any time throughout the month, just send me an email. World Peace Diet Facilitator Trainings. Is ongoing, putting on World Peace Diet study groups, of course, that I think is a wonderful thing that people can do. We have Chris and her husband in Vancouver, actually in Victoria, Canada, British Columbia, working hard to put on a number of different events there, and we'll be going up. I forgot to mention that we'll be going up into to the Pacific Northwest. And so going to Seattle and Portland and in British Columbia, probably in September, October. So let's work together. Let's keep the momentum going. And as we begin to end our time now, I, again, just want to close by thanking all of you for being the light that helps to bless those who are suffering so enormously. In many ways, we are just scratching the surface of our understanding of the vastness of the interconnection of all life, but knowing that everything we do does make a difference. Every act of awareness, consciousness, compassion, and kindness does send into motion reverberations and ripples that bless others. May we continue in the months to come to question the doctrination and programming of our culture, to be a force to bring a new message to the world. It's really an ancient message, the message that we are here to bless each other, that joy is our true nature, that creativity is the essence of who we are, that all life is sacred, and may we continue to respect all living beings and use our indwelling wisdom and compassion to bless our friends and neighbors, to bless the animals, and to bless all living beings. Through the power and presence of the infinite spirit, thank you all so much for joining us, and we look forward to continuing on again next month. And next month, actually, I'll just mention it here, February the 3rd, Thursday next month will be the 21st of February, and we'll look forward to then. I'll continue, of course, to put together the resources, and please also feel free to recommend the World Peace Diet Circle to friends and the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training and Mastery Program to anyone you think might benefit from it. So much love to you all. Thanks again for joining us. Thank you, Steve, so much for coordinating this, and thank you all for sharing and participating. We are the change that we wish to see in the world. Bless you all, and thanks for joining us.